Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Quintessential Listening Poetry. Our very special guest tonight is Adam Shames. Adam, are you with me?
I am indeed, Michael.
Well, hey, I am so glad. Let me ask you a question, Adam. What is poetry?
Oh, I thought you might start with that lovely question. Well, I want to first of all say that I love words. And from a very young age, got very into words, starting with song lyrics. I would hit the radio. And as that evolved into different forms, including poetry, the thing about poetry is your ability to use words precisely and for the most, sort of the most amount of power for the fewest number of words. So to me, a poem is this opportunity to put words together in a way that have never been put together in the history of language. Every poem that I believe I write and you write has never been written before. And so the goal is to use every word as powerfully as possible, and I love trying to do that.
Why do you think it's important?
Well, to me, it's a way of expressing myself. And, it's a hard time for poets in this world today. We're not quite, the famous people we once were or in the past. So it's in some ways a lonely practice. I'm lucky because a lot of times I'm able to put my poems to music and to create songs, which are, I think, a little bit more commonly shared. But to me, to express my feelings, my deepest and most complex confusion in the world. And we'll talk about it a little bit more, but I recently published a book of my poems. And, one of the challenges is how can I express things in a way that, number one, will help me feel better, help me communicate to the world. And in some ways, for me, poetry has always been about sort of getting out of some of the traps and prisons of my life. A lot of my poems, particularly in this book, are kind of about the challenges of connecting to others. And I think that's it. I'm operating from this prison of aloneness a lot of times. And so my words are the keys I'm using to try to get the heck out of it.
What is the title of your book?
The title of my book is Dreaming in Corners. And if we sort of step back and just look at those three little words, dreaming in corners, it certainly sounds common, maybe. But I remember when I was sort of looking it up and going to publish the book, I saw it really no place else. So it gives us all an opportunity to think of, like, what does that mean for us? That's the thing about a great poem, is whatever I intend in that poem, it might be one thing. But if I can communicate something that will offer you a little puzzle or a prize or something that you can interpret in your own way, to me, that's what the gift of poetry is.
Well, what I'd like you to do, Adam, is to share one of your pieces.
Well, thank you. And it certainly makes sense for me to share the title piece of my book, which is called Dreaming in Corners. So come with me on this journey. I think in some ways, I think of a poem as a story told carefully with words picked very precisely. And here's a little story for you that I call Dreaming in Corners. I was dreaming in corners today, but the wall split and I reached in without looking and felt your voice. It was soft like the lake we almost fell into. When does the summer dream of us, you asked. You answered yourself by spreading our blanket on the damp ground near the bare feet I had grown out of. Earlier, you dropped a whisper in my shoe, and I was afraid that when I stepped, it would pop, as secrets often do. Thank you.
Very nice. What sparked your initial love of poetry?
For me, it definitely came from being a kid. You know, I was a kid listening to the radio. Do you remember Casey Kasem Countdown? You remember?
Oh,
that,
yes,
don't
every
you?
Weekend. Every weekend,
every Sunday.
Yes, every exactly. Sunday, yes.
I would listen to that. And the thing about it is, you know, I love songs. I never believed I could be a singer or a musician. It was not something in my family. So at that point, it was just about the words. And I remember at a very young age, I memorized, literally, I think I had about 100 songs that I knew all the words of, and I took pride of repeating it. And so over time, what I realized is a lot of songs, they're about the same stuff, about love and corny and the same cliches and the same rhymes. So I particularly loved the songs with lyrics that told stories or put together new ideas and new relationships, especially ones for me, for whatever reason, at a young age, I was very attuned to kind of the breakup song. You know, that one really, really affected me. And you know, for me, it was Paul Simon. I remember that 50 Ways to Leave a Lover.
Yes, and I remember that as well.
That one lyric in which he says, then she kissed me, and I realized she probably was right. It was something, as a little boy, that just turned my stomach. There was something so powerful about that. I don't know if you felt that way, too.
Yes, I did, actually. But what I'd like you to do is to recite another piece. Yes, I do. Recite another piece for us.
Okay. Well, so a lot of my poems are about, you know, kind of that old story of how do we love? How do we connect? I'm a single guy right now. And even though I've gone through lots of relationships, obviously I've not found one that has stuck for life. So a lot of times it's that question of what's getting in the way. And I might want to start with a very simple situation. Like, this is a poem that was just about meeting somebody at a party. And so much happened in such a short period of time that I wanted to convey it in words. And I've tried it using this word cleft, a cleft. That's what this is called, cleft. I meet you in the corridor, fix you a warm drink, and begin to watch the cleft inside your body as you move towards me. You speak of crumbs and of mountains while I'm stirring. You bring up birds and my eyelids flutter. You reach for the glass in my hand. And the space left to replace what you've taken just might fit the cleft inside your body if you only took one step closer. But I don't ask, and you don't move. You smile and turn back as I do. And from the air along the walls comes a breath that rises, then falls, and slowly replaces the bodies we leave behind as we return to the party. Thank you.
That was beautiful. You know, writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience. Others write because to stay silent is not an option. Why do you write?
Just thinking about how it started for me, I think it started because when I was young and I would hear these songs on the radio, I wanted to write something that reflected what I was feeling. And I think that's the main thing, to make sense of what I'm feeling and put it in a way that I can communicate to someone else. And that's why you probably noticed that my poems sometimes have rhymes in them. And
yes.
I actually have a whole category of poems. I call them pongs, song poems, poem songs, that are really written more as rhymed, rhythmic, spoken word songs. The two that I read for you, I would call those poems, even though they might have some rhymes in them. So I began writing these pongs, these poem songs, to reflect what I was feeling and the confusion about relationships and making things more specific and unique to my own experience. And there's something very powerful for me about putting it on paper. At that point, I didn't really share it with anybody. As I got older, I do still feel like these poems and songs are my babies, and I want to share them with the world. Not always easy to do. So thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Well, let me ask this question. Did you coin the word pongs?
I've never heard anybody else use it. So I do think that, I think of it a little bit as like that pong game, pong, pong, pong. It has a rhythm to it as well as being that hybrid of a poem song.
Well, would you be willing to read
a pong
for us?
I would love to. Okay.
Yes, I really like it.
All right,
that.
Now listen, I'm just being naked here and putting out some of these poems and pongs that don't necessarily reflect me at my most, relationship ideal. So this one is again sort of about a struggle relationship. It's called Legos. And you'll notice that it sort of has more of a rhyme and rhythm to it. Legos. There's a bite in the air that makes me aware of a night in New England with a wide open sky. You were talking of leaving without saying why. A whisper slipped from the side of your mouth. Your sister slammed the door of your house while we were right outside. I wanted to hold you between my hands, to shake you, to make it still make some sense, to take you back 8 years before when we still sat with books on the floor, but you couldn't lie anymore. So Thanksgiving managed to mumble out its thanks while your brother and his army lobbed Legos at tanks. I watched without touching as you stared at the moon, sharp voices launching from your parents' room until you began to cry. I noticed a tear roll to the side of your mouth, but I was no hero who could carry you out. I could no longer peel burrs from your hair or show off my tan lines during the winter. I couldn't even try. I was wearing two sweatshirts, leaves in my pockets, with your brother still laughing in a pile on the ground. I followed your finger for a walk after dinner toward the field we once used to roll on and on. I looked at your face and saw it was empty, and I remembered a promise in a card you once sent me. And I remember your eyes when you turned from the sky and said, "This is goodbye." Thank you.
Very nice. You know, it was once said that poetry is wrapped in creativity. What does being creative mean to you?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And, to me, creativity is a key part of my life. I think you know that I founded this network called the Creativity Network in San Francisco to bring people together to share their writings, their songs, their cooking, whatever it is that their creative bent is. And so for me, it is about expressing the unique selves that we are. Whatever form it takes, creativity is about really, we're unique beings. We really are. And we can do it in a poem, we can do it in a song, we can do it in a painting, we can do it in the way we dress, we can do it on how we walk down the street. But I really value creativity. And that's really my goal, is to share something that is unique to me.
right. Let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back. Again, I'm Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Adam Shamez. If you'd like to talk to Adam, the call-in number is 646-787-1631. Please share another piece of your work.
Well, thank you. I recently was in Colombia, the country, and had this amazing moment I remember. We're in the coffee zone, and we're staying at the manor of a coffee plantation called the Hacienda. And just this moment crystallized something beautiful for me. So I'm going to move away from those more serious, lonely poems and have just a simple kind of nature-infused one. It's called At the Hacienda. The peacock jumps for the plantain without success, and settles for standing atop a nearby green fruit bush. A hummingbird flutters to my left until I turn and is already gone. This red banister manor house veranda, where I float on this thick weave of hammock, is surrounded by every kind of leaf, petal, and frond. Every shape of green, every shade of color sprouting. I hear bird song, camera clicks, calls, and now cicada sound beginning to fill the twilight. In minutes, the old toads will join in. But now this hammock cradles me like my Colombian abuela, and the peacock jumps down to the grass while I look up to see a white sliver of the moon curled above a cloud that will soon consume the western sky. Thank you.
You know, so much is happening in our world today. The good, bad, and indifferent of living in this world. What do you see as being the role of a poet in modern day society?
Yeah, I mean, just like a poet has always been, you know, the poet is the one to call out things that are not spoken about. And, you know, my style of poetry is not necessarily as popular right now, because right now I think a lot of poetry is more political and, you know, more confessional and, you know, trying to make some kind of point and make people listen. Mine is a little bit more, I would say, psychological. And I really believe that psychologically, It's a very confusing time right now. Who are we? What's important to us? What are we doing about the fact that there are a lot of lonely people in this world right now, and that, you know, we're friends with our phones more than are with humans? So my goal as a poet, as a songwriter, is to help humanize us. You know, I feel like the pendulum has gone way too far to this place that we're almost robots, or we are, you know, capitalist market value folks. So how can we become more human? You hear what I'm saying, Michael?
Yes, I do. I do hear you. I do hear you. Tell us about your process, Adam. Is it pen and paper, computer, notebooks? How do you write?
Well, it's definitely changed over the years, but primarily it is definitely a pen and a paper. And somewhere in nature, or maybe early in the morning, even now early in the morning, I have a little notebook where I've been kind of forcing myself, even when I'm not always feeling as inspired, to get a one-page poem down every time I sit down. So I just sort of decide, where should it be? And for me, a lot of times it starts with the concrete. It starts what is here and now. So when I was on the hammock in Colombia, I'm watching this peacock. So the poem might start with something physical. And you'll notice that in a lot of my poems is definitely there's literal stuff happening. But then to me, it's trying to get at something else that either through an image or a metaphor or something written in a way that's strange or different to just push us into a new direction to think of something a little differently.
Very nice. You know, all poets have several words that come up over and over again. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use?
My favorite words to use? That is interesting. I have a favorite word to use. I mean, I know I love metaphors. I don't think I can answer that. I don't think
All right.
I think my goal is always to come up with a new way of saying something. Although I just noticed somewhere where I had a similar phrasing a couple times, and I was like, "Crap! I wouldn't want to read those two poems next to each other." So yeah, I feel like every poem I want to be as unique as possible.
I like that.
Do you have?
Well, please share another piece.
Use over.
Yes.
There's certain things
not
that
really,
you use
no.
over again.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. That's just one of the questions they pay me the big bucks to ask.
All right, well, I definitely want to read
But it is
some
a good question
poems,
to think about, though.
It is. And I'd like to do one more of these pongs. And again, what makes the pongs different is that they really have a rhyme scheme and they're written with a lot of rhymes. And it's definitely one of the things that I pride myself on. It's kind of unique rhymes and ways of expressing something rhythmically. And I brought up the whole thing about being human and how can we be more human in a way. And it takes me back, this is some years ago when I was traveling in Asia. And I don't know, have you ever been to Tokyo, to Japan?
No, I've not.
Very unique city, so many people. And, you know, they say in Japan, if you leave your, you know, backpack on the ground, it'll stay there for a couple of days because so many people are going by and they're very polite. And it was a culture that fascinated me. And there's a lot more to it. But I think I captured something in this poem of mine. And this was back in the day when they didn't have electronic entry to the subway. The subways, when you got near a subway, you'd always hear this clicking, click, 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 this constant clicking. And it was this ticket puncher, this guy who would punch your ticket. And he would just be punching your tickets all the time and playing with the sound, little implement in his hand over and over again. But there was something about that that inspired me to write this, I'm going to call this a pong, this rhyme poem called In Tokyo. Here's how it goes. In Tokyo. The same ticket puncher in each railway station never looks you in the eye. The click keeps resounding without hesitation until you start to slide into the circles of sounds, the arrows of action, that air that is muggy and slow down in the subways, and there are so many subways in Tokyo. Her apartment was the size of a pantry, her bedroom just a couchette. I leaned on paper-thin walls, sushi in hand, but I hadn't tried the fishy stuff yet. I had walked with a bouncing waist pack through miles of people, miles of heat, folding my map back into my lap without finding my midnight street. Now, when Japanese girls order Taiwanese food, I close my eyes for just a minute. But when umbrellas of smoke spill from the temple well, I wash my head right in it. I wash my head right in it. and the same ticket puncher in each railway station never looks you in the eye. He can't know that you've been lost and walking for hours. He'll never give you yen for your crumpled up dollars. But you hear the clicks keep coming as you walk past him. You hear the clicks still humming as you descend into the circles of sound, the arrows of action, the movements that will never slow. Down in the subways, and there are so many subways in Tokyo. Thank you.
Very nice. I really like that. Adam, what makes a poem good?
Well, here's what I think makes any work of art good in particular, and I mentioned it a little earlier. It's when you as the writer or the artist, the poet, create something that you yourself can go back to later and are still interested in. I mean, that's the hardest thing in the world, to create something that, you know, for songwriters who sing the same song over and over. But a poem in particular, I think the greatest poems are the ones where I can give it to you, you can read it, and it will mean something different for you, or maybe different every time you read it. Really, a great poem, Michael, is hard to just me read it here in audio one time. I think it needs to be read on the page. It needs to be maybe read a couple times. Otherwise, there's not enough in it beyond the literal. So I think a great poem has metaphorical power, and that something about it each time can make you think a little differently and imagine something for yourself a little differently. And it doesn't really matter what I, as the poet or the poet, him or herself, was thinking. If it can create something that stands on its own, kind of like a child that you let out to the pasture, I think that's what makes a poem great.
All right. You know, speaking of the word great, all great writers, performers have great writing influences. Who are some of yours, and what makes them great in your eyes?
Well, I will start with my earliest influences again, which is, I would say, Paul Simon, Cat Stevens, and Jackson Browne. You know, the great, I would say, lyrical songwriters of that whatever era, late 70s or whatever, when I was young. And I remember a Jackson Browne song in which he ends the song. I think he was 24 years old when he wrote it, and he ends the song with the line, you know, "Forgive me for what I've done." I wish I could remember right now. Beautiful song called "These Days." You can look it up. But he ends it with something so honest and felt true. And I think all, you know, if you think of Cat Stevens and his lyrics, they really had my head spinning in a wonderful way. So again, by telling a story, giving a lyric, giving some concrete detail, but then taking me to a place that's much larger, and then maybe coming back with something very literal or something very honest or very simple. So those are songwriters. And again, I think they're wonderful poets. I think all as right. poets, I always love Walt Whitman. Are you a Whitman fan?
Yes, I am.
You know, just the way, you know, that was back then, you weren't allowed to not be iambic pentameter or rhyme or whatever. He just broke all the rules, and it's full of so much passion, and the way he expressed it and listed things that he loved, that was amazing. I'm also a huge fan of Mary Oliver. You know her, right?
Yes, yes.
Beautiful, beautiful. And, you know, a lot of her work is very similar, where there's nature and there's literal, concrete details, but then there's something that's metaphorical that rises from it. I have had other poets over the years, but I would say in general, I'm not, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of, let's say, the New Yorker poetry that's published. I find it not accessible enough. I like accessible poetry that I
yes.
can sink my teeth in, understand enough of it.
Well, share another piece of your work.
All right. Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to go back a little bit when I was a younger man and started writing poetry for the first time, and share a little bit from those days. I had lived in Denmark when I was studying abroad, and another interesting, you know, I love traveling in other worlds. And I remember having a lot of rules. And, you know, one of the rules I had as a kid, I just very much believed in being a nonconformist. And I remember all the cool guys with their long coats. I don't know if back in Chicago where I grew up, there's something about a long coat that just seemed really phony to me. I don't know why. This was a moment where I had a little insight or change, and it's called long coat and suede shoes. Today does smell like Denmark, and I'm ready to find a shawarma shop with you next to me, perhaps telling me I've made a wrong turn as usual. Now as then, the sun has unbuttoned the coat that I bought from a secondhand clothing store in Copenhagen. I recall a vow never to buy a long coat and a promise to walk only in sneakers. Now as then, the moisture from the ground is staining the front of my light suede shoes. I was annoyed the first time the discoloration did not disappear overnight as I expected, or even when I resorted to a blow dryer I had borrowed. You laughed when I told you, and then stepped on my foot. I've tried to avoid wearing my light suede shoes when it's wet outside, but sometimes it rains or melts unexpectedly. Thank you.
I really like that. That one gave me a chuckle. Thank you.
Nice.
You know, poets hail from all over the world.
Phony.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Poets hail from all over the world. Where do you hail from?
Well, I guess I am a Chicago boy. I was born in New York and I was a teenager in Philadelphia. But I'm definitely a Chicago boy, product of the lakefront, being on the lake, and Midwestern friendliness, I would say. But once I graduated from college, which was near Boston, so lots of the main cities of the United States, I went out to San Francisco, and that really shaped me as a young adult. So I consider myself part Californian, part Midwestern, and now living in D.C. Very
D.C.
different from those other places. Yeah.
Have you had an opportunity to write a lot of poems in D.C., about D.C.?
Not yet. Not yet. Written a song. In some ways, I think the older you get, in some ways your inspiration changes. And I would say that D.C. I've not quite found my inspiration yet in D.C. I wrote a blog about some of the frustrations. Yeah, it's a very left brain city in a lot of ways, very workaholic city. And I'm still looking for my inspiration, I think, in D.C.
You know, some poets are also active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry literature activities? I know singing is one. Writing music sounds
like
one.
Yeah. Right. So writing music. I wrote a whole musical that I have a book for it. Hopefully someday I'll be able to do more of a musical. I'm very into giving workshops. I'm a facilitator. And finding ways to break down that fourth wall, the wall in between whoever's talking or performing and the people in the audience. You know, the philosophy of this creativity network, and which is still the name of my business, is to go from spectator to creator. So whether it's giving a workshop, I believe in full participation from other people, or whether it's this interactive musical that I wrote, is all about, to me, it's all about jamming. So I love to lead a song jam and have everybody play whatever they can, sing however they can, whether it's a simple song where people can sing the lyrics or maybe they can dance to it or whatever. So I'm a big lover of the jam when we all get to do our own thing.
All right, all right. Well, please share another of your works.
All right, thank you. Let me do, I want to do one more. When I was younger, after I graduated from college, I went up to Montreal and I wrote this song. It's called To Montreal. The sun felt like a fountain today, and one of its rays poked me so hard in the eye that something came out of my ear as I listened to the sound of my car drive away from school for the last time. Mirrored glasses made an 8 p.m. sun even more dangerous, and the silence at the side of the road between New Hampshire hills was even louder than the whispers of those old buildings trying to assure me that my name would not be forgotten. The sun stopped following me to hide behind a mountain, and when the mountain had gone, so had the sun. It was then I remembered I had never told the buildings my name. Thank you.
Do you think you were meant to be a poet? Based on everything that I've heard so far, it sounds like it. Do you think you were meant
Hell
to be
yeah.
a poet? Why? Tell me more.
Because for whatever reason, this body, mind, soul of mine has always had so many questions and always felt in some ways misplaced. Let's be honest about it. Most poets, we are people who, for whatever reason, this time and place may not be exactly the right fit. So for me, I feel like I'm always trying to understand and explain, and words is one of the ways to do it, where I am and how I can get more free and what do I need to understand to feel more at peace. I would say that, you know, I'm not someone who feels as at peace as I would like to in this world, and probably that's my karma for the rest of my life. So poetry is one way of expressing it. So I think from a young age, I needed to use words to express something I didn't understand. And I think that's what makes me a born poet or writer.
Share another piece of your work.
All right. So I'm going, so I went back in time to Denmark and then that drive to Montreal. Now I want to share a poem from San Francisco where I lived for my young adulthood. And you can imagine how much we all experienced during those 20s, early 30s.
Yes.
And this is a song, this is a poem that is called Night Like This. I am drawn to the edge of this city, past the tourist trespass line, the weather warning signs, to the chains that separate concrete from dark water. I step from a thick car, spring steam still beating from my skin, out into the front of the panoramic night. A shuddering red bridge above me, the lit city with its alien fog shroud, the sky checkered with lights, and one plane too low not to want to touch. Below me is crashing foam, black and hard, white and loud, upon these rocks, so old and so clean that they have to be called friends. Over toward Angel Island, I see at least one skeleton sail, and I need to know what the hell someone is doing out there, spinning under the bridge on a night like this. What the hell are we doing out here? And I suddenly understand it's not me. This phone, this frantic, perfect moment, the stars, the plane, the postcard of the city, the evenly spaced lamps of the bridge, they're not me. But how I want to stuff it all into the tiny crack between the folds of skin of this unbearable bloated belly again and again, wave after wave, until I am completely full of night. Thank you.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, one of my themes always is like, what do we do with our feelings?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we feel misplaced, when we feel lost, and we feel lonely. And that poem was, you know, that's what I used to do, go out to under the Golden Gate Bridge, sometimes scream out into the water, and try to capture it in the poem.
You know, if you had to convince a friend or colleague to read your book, What might you tell them?
You know, I think most of us poets need help with that. You know, first of all, wanting to promote myself. Who wants to do that? Gosh.
Right.
And also, do I really want people to read all of these? I mean, they're very personal.
Yes, they are.
Think that's tough. But I also think that I have to remove myself from the poems, from the work, like I said before. And I think, you know, this poem, this book, Dreaming in Corners, was dedicated to the endless attempt in my life to connect with others, to connect with myself, connect with you. That's what I write in the foreword. And I want to connect with others, and we all do. And these poems might help you connect with yourself and maybe your own feelings of that need to connect.
You know, you state in your book that these poems were 30 years in the making. I think that's correct.
Yeah.
How has your idea of what poetry is changed since you began writing poems?
Well, as I mentioned, I've gone through these different phases. So it started with me trying to imitate a song.
Okay.
And then in college, realizing like there's power in words by themselves that don't need that rhyme or that rhythm. You know, songs I think need to be a little more literal. And so you're not really taking advantage of every word as much. And that's fine because it's much more sort of familiar things you're trying to sing. But a poem was that chance to say something really precise. And, you know, over time, I think we all develop our own style. So you can sense my style. I don't really know how to describe it. And again, I don't think it's that much in vogue, Michael, right now. I mean, just in general, when I hear poetry out there, it's quite a little different. Mine might be a little more old school.
Right.
But I don't know if my view of what makes a good poem has changed. I want there to be this underlying bubbling feeling there and an imagination journey. You know, that's what I want in my poems in a way, is to take you as a reader or a listener on an imagination journey that takes you through something that can resonate for you. You know, things have definitely changed for me as I became more of a songwriter. And I think my songwriting has changed to become more interactive. You know, so that's really where that's gone. And I think in some ways those pongs are like that too. They have more like choruses, and choruses help people be more interactive if poems were to be interactive. Although I think poems are as personal and probably non-interactive compared to songs.
Right. Well, let's take a brief break and we'll be right back.
Thanks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Anthony Hingirl. I'm here with Adam Chamez, and we're talking about poetry. If you'd like to ask Adam a question, again, the telephone number is 646-787-1631. Adam, do you belong to a literary group?
I go to a writer's group sometimes, but not really.
Okay.
You know, I'm still pretty new to D.C., so maybe you can introduce me to one.
I can do that. All right. Let's get back to it. Share another piece of your work.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I would love to, I know we don't have that much time left, but, you know, my life, like many of us romantic types, has been definitely has a strong desire to love. And, you know, this book has a lot of poems. I have a section of the book. It's called Dis, in parentheses, Connection. So it's like my attempt at connection. Another section is called discretion. Another is called permission. It's like, do we have permission to love? And how do I get through this prison that I'm in? So I'd like to read a couple, if you don't mind.
Yes, no, please.
Puts it out there. Puts it out there. I'm sometimes embarrassed to read it in front of a woman friend or whatever, but I'm just going to do it. Here's one called Before Reading Neruda and Garcia Lorca. A talk about digital culture at the bookstore with cards propped next to novels scribbled with praise from Leslie or Lisette, and seeing the slightly rounded cheek of a young woman smiling with her eyes and running her brown fingers through her boyfriend's hair as the crowd lurks and clumps minutes after the last microphone to comment. I sit down to watch this woman. Her pants are wet black sheets, and she laughs with her other hand near the question of her face. She doesn't turn to me and doesn't know I'm only pretending to read in the stiff chair behind her and to the left. She will never know that in the aperture of her arm, the dark alive eyes, the bread of her skin, I see the ancient tribe somewhere near Spain that we both once were. Thank you. And let me do another, if you don't mind.
It's no, please.
Similar, because, you know, in some ways, being a voyeur is not allowed these days. And so it is with some guilt I share poems about, in some ways, looking on from a lonely point of view. But I'd like to do another one, and it's sort of a different feel in this one, called Jet Light. Woman in dark blue, your soft arms on the sand, their curly hairs, the wind ahead. Why can't I have you? Your body is curves and lengths, your skin of soft freckles. Let me slide down you to cure my dizziness. Taste the valleys. Take the tally of the parts I love. Woman of sarong, recline on the rock. Unfold your arms, the river of your mouth, the way you wait. I don't know of your thirst. Jet light now above, you bend and gather. I follow your girl legs up the sandy ramp. My eyes move with you. Your walk is steady. You do not turn until the proper time. Woman in dark blue, I will not have you. Thank you.
What do you think is a measure of success as a poet? A measure of success.
I should ask you, what do you think? What do you think? Well,
don't.
You know that I self-published. I self-published, but
yes.
I had a good handful of poems that were published before. I used to send out poems to literary magazines I'd find on the shelves, and you know, had a handful that accepted me. I was very, very honored. I don't know if I don't think I've even read one that was accepted in this case, but there are some in the book. So, you know, but I believe that as a poet, it's pretty tough to get satisfaction in some measurable way. Certainly, you could become a published poet. That's one way. And there's more online opportunities for people to seek out, and it'd be great, even if it's just something that very few people look at. If it's published online and someone accepts it, that's wonderful. You could send out a manuscript of your book to a few presses, and I think that's very tough to do, especially if you don't have more of an academic background as a poet. So I think there are ways to be accepted and applauded in the world. I think for me, I will never forget this one poem that I read in this huge hall of people in which I could hear a pin drop. And there was something about a place where I paused, where I heard a few people squeal. I heard someone say, Adam, in some way where I could tell they were affected by it. That gave me great satisfaction. If we have time, I wouldn't mind reading that poem as well.
Well, would you like to read it now?
If you don't mind. And of course, now.
No,
now
please.
That I said that,
I'd love it. I'd love it. Thank you.
Now that I've said it, it's a little bit self-congratulatory, if not anticlimactic. However,
that's okay.
It gets at this desire I have to connect with people. It's called Let Me Tell You Something. What if I lifted both of my arms up from the sides of my body, dug my elbows into the wall, and catapulted myself forward, feet first, toward you? Would that lure you from the world? What if you were distracted by a fly near your eye and you turned to see my body falling on its spine, my body crawling one vertebra at a time toward you? Would that disturb your pattern of chatter? Let me tell you something. I would like to tear the colors off my skin and spread their yolk over my face until I spit rainbows. I would like to turn to the wall, arch my body, throw back my head until you see the spidery reflections of my lashes on the ceiling until they fall like warm sugar into your eyes and become questions you already know the answers to. I would like to love you. Thank you.
You know, I can understand their squeals. That's a very powerful work. I can understand.
Thanks a lot. Well, thank you.
Please
so
share
much for
another
giving me an opportunity.
Oh yes, I know we're closing out soon.
I would love to.
But please,
all right,
please share.
I'm going to fit in as many as I can. Fantastic.
Okay, please.
Here's just a quick one. My book of poems have a lot of snippets in them, just sort of pieces from other poems or poems that I wanted to include but didn't feel like I needed to include the whole one. This is called On My Belly Outside the Lunch Hall. I was once fed by a golden ladle with a brown sugar handle held by the flesh of a hand that loved me. I once bathed in a milky puddle, its surface a mirror of the cloud-specked sky and the burning of the other side of the earth. I am grown to bend toward dying, to gather sweetness until I am dry. I am old compared to the dawn that comes again and cools the land. Thank you.
You know, your poems are very melodic. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice, if there's a relationship?
It's really, I think, first of all, if you mean speaking the poem out loud or just speaking voice in general?
Speaking voice in general.
Oh, in general. How's that different from my written voice?
Yes.
Well, I mean, for the written voice, it is definitely, I'm a lot more long-winded, I'm sure, in my speaking voice, as you probably can tell. The poem is a chance to really narrow it into precisely what you want to say. That's one thing. I also think the rhymes and the sounds in a poem, that's what I'm trying to get in the written voice. But I don't know. I think that's an interesting and tough question, and it would be an interesting question to ask someone who knows me. You know, how different. I would say more.
Okay.
My written voice is probably more honest.
You know, when people hear your work, I'm sure they want more. What's next for you as a poet?
Well, I am kind of in a new phase of working on some new poems. As I said, I've been a little bit slow in getting inspired here in D.C. And just what I mentioned, I feel like it is time for me to be even more naked and more in one's face. That last poem, Let Me Tell You Something, kind of in your face a little bit. It's like sort of speaking to people. And I feel like for me now, as now a middle-aged man, now that I've gotten older, I feel like I'm kind of unseen. I think we all are when we're older. And that there's so much more to me and to other people than people realize. So I kind of want to just put it out there, what I'm feeling, what my struggles and loves and passions are, and do it in a way I think that's a little bit more in your face, but it requires me to really feel more free and less inhibited. And I'm feeling a little bit inhibited right now in DC, so it's not quite there yet. But going out where I met you out live and reading stuff, I think is a good way to inspire me.
Well, you've inspired me. I enjoy hearing your work. And what I'd like us to do is to conclude our time together with you sharing more of your work. So find several poems that you'd like to read, and we'll go from there.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so some of, you know, my poems I think are more complex, and others are a little more simple. Let me read another simple one. This is one of my friends, Michael Obadiah is his name, who inspired me to become a musician. I would hang out in his room, and I wrote this. It's called Michael's Room. I'm down here with the coffee carpet, one staple hidden in its tufts, and my friend playing the piano with his hairy hands. His elbows bounce, and music spills like manna from the candlelit walls. And out in the street, the wind and the cars pass each other without complaint. Soon, the song will settle into the quiet of the room, and I'll be ready to feel the night air on my arms. Thank you. All right, I have a whole section of dedicated poems, so I call it dedication. And there's one, this was published in the Mid-American Poetry Review, very simple one to my father called Dad in the Yard. I don't know if you grew up having to do a lot of housework in the yard. I hated that.
My dad would
make me. This is my ode to called Dad in the Yard. I heard your scraping rake in my Sunday afternoon ears through the sportscaster's play-by-play over the idle water running as you called my name. I apologize only for missing the completion, not the work, the twilight pressing my head on your chest as I listened to the day in your rhythmic, satisfied breathing, one heave for my three. Thank you. All right. Let me read. I also have a section called Divination, kind of more spiritual poems. I'm Jewish. I grew up Jewish. I always identify with the more mystical and Kabbalistic parts of being a Jew, but wrote this poem about the shofar that's blown on Rosh Hashanah, the new year. And this is something that got published in some books in different synagogues. It's called Last Night You Spoke of the Shofar. It is the story of the history of the wind, you said, the call of an animal you once rode over the dirt and stones while Moses dreamed beside you. You feel its sound in your body, and you are once again a child looking out your Sunday school window, following that ancient simultaneous breath to other mouths and moments on this earth where people like us have come together to end and to begin again. And today we sit in this Midwestern holy city with its earthbound lake and its breathing buildings, listening once again to the deep longing of the shofar, urging us toward a renewal of spirit and the clarity of purpose that grows like seasons in our hearts. Thank you. All right, let's see. Let me see what else I can do. This is so fun. Thank you so much for this.
We have time for one more. Let's see. One more good one. Yes.
All right, let's just do a nice, simple one. Okay. This was just a old nostalgic one. It's called Without Permission. This was me, I remember, going back to my hometown, to the room I grew up in, without permission. This window could open into sky, unlatched by an invisible arm, reaching across the distance of belts and bodies that have filled this cluttered room. But I have already stepped into the day shadow, where the carpet is darker, and taken a seat here without permission from the child who used to watch through the fence until he became too aware of his own watching, and scrambled back home, climbed through the window, and snuck into the cold and opened bed. Thank you.
You know, honestly, I don't want you to stop. I am really enjoying your work. Really enjoying your work. As you said, again, it's very accessible. It's very honest. And I enjoy it. So I want to thank you so much for being with me tonight. And I'd like you to return in
Doctor,
the future.
Doctor, you are the best. I would love
to thank
you for providing this forum. Really awesome. Thanks so much.
All right. Have a good evening, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.